970 WDAY. Welcome. Midday Live. Mike Cappell here. Sandy Buttweiler.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. Nateel Falk is over there. Eric Johnson's over there.
It's so dark in there. I can't even see Cappell.
That's good.
Well,
that's because Piepenberg's in the way.
Well, that's right.
Well, I can see Piepenberg, but I can't see you.
So we understand that there's going to be a Red River Valley Fair food run today.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ordered anything, Mike?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
You want to tell us what?
I go with the, I'm very traditional.
Corn dog,
cheese curds, some mini donuts.
You're getting all that?
Well, yeah, I'm just going to have a little sample. I'll probably bring some home later for the kids.
Are you going to eat it all?
No.
Okay, so maybe you'll share then.
Maybe.
With me.
Possibly.
Your partner.
It could be.
Nateel, what have you ordered?
I asked for mini donuts and a brat.
Ah.
I think I might have said or. So I guess we'll see what ends up coming back. If either one of those things come back, I'll be very excited. Because what I really wanted was the mini apple pie with cinnamon ice cream.
That's not going to travel very well.
Yeah, but Johnson reminded me that the cinnamon ice cream wasn't going to travel very well. So now I'm dragging my housemate out to the fair on Friday so that I can get it then.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Very good.
Good thinking.
Well, of course, the Red River Valley Fair begins today, and that means maybe we'll have some severe weather.
Yeah.
And so we're going to talk about that first off this morning on Midday Live. Another subject we're going to get to here before long is a letter to the editor about our nation and whether or not we should be a Christian nation or not. We've asked that question. We'll get into it a little deeper. And as it turns out, there was some Russian collusion in the election, as it turns out. We've seemed to now know that Donald Trump Jr. was seeking anti-Clinton information from Russia's government.
Unbelievable.
We'll get to that, too, coming up.
We're going to talk to Jared Piepenberg first, one of our meteorologists here. Hello, Jared.
How you doing?
Good to see you. Well, today, as Sandy mentioned, is the start of the fair, which generally means there's going to be probably some severe weather. So this year, no different. And last night, watching John Wheeler, I haven't had a chance to check a forecast this morning. I got up a little late, so I didn't get to see you this morning. So where are we at as the day comes together? Obviously, you get a little clearer picture. Mm-hmm. Last night, we were in the, I think, moderate risk zone in the area, but John was saying last night that definitely severe weather in the area. So do you have a better idea now of where that might be hitting and about what time?
Yeah, I think we're kind of closing in on how this could possibly shape up here this afternoon. So we are really close to the moderate risk now. It's kind of just in central parts of Minnesota. So it's just southeast of Fargo-Moorhead, but we are in the slight risk, and all those colors really don't mean a whole lot to too many people. But just like in the valley in central Minnesota, there's a pretty decent shot that we'll have at least a few thunderstorms popping up and going into that severe criteria. And it still kind of looks that way. With the cloud cover we've had this morning, I think that may have helped us out just a little bit. And it may have just pushed the timing of those potential storms back just a little bit farther. Because yesterday, I'm sure John was talking about maybe mid-afternoon, we could start to see some of those thunderstorms firing up. But now it kind of looks like it might be late afternoon, maybe better chance right around that that evening time.
Okay, and any indication of where we might see them start to fire up, or is that still the big mystery until they actually start to pop up?
Potentially, but right now I'd lean toward kind of the very eastern edge of North Dakota. We can start to see, you know, let's just throw out a time, 5 o'clock. We start to see a couple thunderstorms pop up around there. And right now I was just kind of looking at, we call them higher resolution models. So they kind of go by a very short time frame, and they come out with a new model run every single hour.
Oh, okay.
So just kind of, it's just like grabbing as much information around here as possible. And we can kind of look at those. I was looking at a few and just kind of looks like they're leaning a little bit more toward some isolated thunderstorms popping up, just meaning just a select few, and then those kind of moving into central parts of Minnesota here as we continue throughout the evening.
Well, we definitely need a little rain, so obviously if we can keep some of the damaging winds and hails and those things, the tornadoes that we don't want to see with some rain, that would be ideal.
It really,
for a lot of people,
it really would. It's so hard to get that in July though.
Yeah.
It's like something fires up, it usually is just
it's
a strong
nasty
thunderstorm, and it's gonna, you know, even if it's non-severe, it'll still have 40, 50 mile an hour winds, something like that, or some small hail. So let's cross our fingers and hope that is just the case. But I think that we'll have some that could be producing some hail, some stronger wind gusts. And the way that this system is set up, you can't rule out a tornado, although those are, you know, usually pretty rare. But we're definitely going to be on top of things here this afternoon. I know John and Lauren are coming in a little early. so they can get the forecast done faster and then just concentrate on the radar, you know, as we head toward late afternoon, evening.
Yeah, I do see for those in central Minnesota in particular, Bemidji area and all points around there, looks like they've had some pretty active weather in that area today. So.
Yeah, it's just we had some showers move through this morning, and there was a few rumbles kind of here and there. Those started kind of in eastern parts of North Dakota this morning. I was kind of watching those and mainly just turned into some very light rain. I haven't checked the rain gauge out here, but I bet it's just a few hundredths, mm-hmm. I would guess. I don't even know if we had enough rain to get a tenth.
Yeah, there were some spots in the driveway and a few spots when I got to work here in the parking lot. Excuse me. But, didn't see anything real measurable popping up there. So once we get through tonight, and, of course, we'll have you covered here, WDAY TV and radio. We will be all over this stuff. Our whole team will be in and ready, and then Jared will have updates for you when he gets in, of course, with First News and everything tomorrow morning. So once we get through this, what are we looking at here as we get into the midweek and towards the weekend?
Pretty quiet weather for some people that do not like the heat, who I know is over here.
So, yeah.
Back here.
I'm with her. I don't like it too hot.
Yeah, tomorrow's your day. So I think we have some 70s for most of the valley. I think maybe it's very extreme southeastern North Dakota may hit that 80-degree mark, but Fargo-Moorhead could be shooting for those upper 70s. So it'll be a little bit cooler weather. I think we'll be a little bit drier. Higher field of the air. There's a little bit of that mugginess out there today.
Definitely, yeah.
But as we head throughout the rest of the work week, the temperatures are going to get a boost. It's going to be a very summery day on Thursday, and then the heat is on as we head toward Friday and over the weekend.
So today, though, looking at things firing up late afternoon, early evening. So if you're heading out to the fair tonight and there's a Red Hawks game tonight, you're just going to want to kind of keep one eyeball on the sky.
I think that's a great way to put it. It's so hard to pinpoint exactly where these thunderstorms are going to fire up or be.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, as we get closer, then, you know, we can watch which way they're heading and kind of give you a better idea. But I'd say, you know, exactly what you said, this late afternoon, evening hours, watch your, you know, Storm Tracker weather app or whatever you use. Hopefully use that one. But
yeah, you definitely should use that one. In fact, I'll tell you a good reason to use it is I just got back from Miami. I was there over the weekend. And what I love about the Storm Tracker app is I was down there and obviously down in Florida there, you get rain and thunder. It's crazy the weather down there all the time. And so we were doing different things we had scheduled outdoors. And I hit my Storm Tracker weather app. It had updated the location. So it was kind of funny to see the WDAY6 logo and then below it the Miami Beach forecast. But the beauty of the Storm Tracker app is you can take it with you. So if you are going out to the fair tonight, if you are going to the Red Hawks game, you can watch what's going on right on the app. I know you guys do have video. There's radar, everything you need right there, hour by hour. You can take it anywhere in the country you go and use it. So it's really a valuable app to download.
It is. I have a whole bunch of different places I like to click on so I can just look at the different weather going on. And as we head throughout the evening here, John and Lauren will have posts on there. And we usually put anywhere a 20 to 30 second video, and you can just see a little short clip of update of what we're seeing.
Yeah, it's really great. Jared Piepenberg, meteorologist here, as we're getting ready. Hopefully nothing too major rolls through, but definitely a threat of severe weather in our area tonight. And we'll certainly keep you up to date here on 970 WDAY and, of course, WDAY Channel 6. We'll have updates throughout the day and into the evening and into the overnight if needed. Thanks, Jared.
You bet. Thanks for having me on.
Midday Live rolls on next. This is 970 WDAY.
WDAY 1122-293-9000-888-970-9329 or talk at WDAY.com. We now have seen some of the emails that show a Russian prosecutor offered Donald Trump Jr. information on Secretary Clinton, and we can get to that a little bit later, but a letter to the editor drew our attention this morning on Midday Live. It comes from a gentleman named Isaac, and the headline is, "We are not a Christian nation, nor should we be." And that is our first topic of discussion today.
Mm-hmm.
No, we are not a Christian nation, nor should we be. We have a right to freedom of religion. We can choose to believe. We can choose not to believe. Not everybody in this country is a Christian, for example. Not everybody believes in God. Not everybody believes in Catholicism. Not everybody believes in the Jewish faith. Not everybody believes in Buddhism. Not everybody believes in Islam, for example. And in this letter, the author writes, "This is a relatively common utterance among those who have not read the Constitution, that America is a Christian nation. Nowhere in the original Constitution is a mention of God, religion, or any similar term. And the First Amendment mentions religion in the following clauses. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof." So Congress cannot prevent us from practicing any particular religion we choose.
Yeah, and you know, this is it's interesting because the narrative, especially of many conservatives, is that, you know, these are the kinds of values that we have in our society. And I would say, yes, there are many Christian-based values that we have in our society. So loosely, there is a connection there. But there's this, I think sometime this thought process of people that religion was this tightly compacted thing with the independence of our nation. And when you do some research on it, it wasn't necessarily this acrimonious relationship that I think some people would like you to believe. In fact, there's a couple of things that are interesting. And a lot of this stuff really came in the 19th century when we were dealing with things like communism and Nazis and all of these different terrible things that we had to deal with over the course of many years. And many of this addition of God into certain things, for example, like "In God We Trust." Okay, some people think, well, boy, that goes way back. You know when that came to be? Do you know when?
1950s.
1956.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know when "One Nation Under God" was made part of the Pledge of Allegiance? You know when the "Under God" was added? In the 50s. And so these things that people sometimes will point out and say, well, we are a Christian nation. Look at these. Those things were added in later. Now, I'm not saying that being a Christian nation in terms of the positive values of Christianity is a bad thing. I don't think anybody's going to say that. But yeah, this notion that we're a country of this certain religion, I don't think is accurate. But, you know, it is interesting, though, that we are in a time where there's a lot of discussion about Islam as an example, as a religion that, you know, people, I think, have a lot of problems with. And I don't necessarily have a problem with the religion itself, but what I do have a problem with is, you know, when people just kind of blindly say, well, you know, we want these cultures that come here. It's just so great when these cultures come here. And the more I look at some of the culture of Islamic, you know, Arabic societies, what have you, just the Middle Eastern societies, what from those societies is it that we want to put back into America? I don't find a lot of positive things in those societies. Again, that's religion aside, but remember, religion is kind of dominant over how those cultures live their life. I don't like the oppression of women that they preach, the way that people have no voice. I mean, these are all these things that are very American is what these cultures have. And so when people say, well, these cultures are wonderful, they might have some great food, but what about these ancient culture traditions that have carried over are in any way, shape, or form American? That's where I get lost in the whole thing. But back to religion in the U.S. and being a Christian nation. No, it's not a Christian nation in government, but in value, I think there is definitely a case to be made that, yeah, it's kind of a Christian nation for the positive values of Christianity and Judaism.
But if you're not a Christian, if you describe yourself as a non-Christian, oftentimes you are, there's the idea that you are that you're a second-class citizen. I mean, heaven forbid that you don't want prayer in school because you want separation of church and state.
And a lot of that's, again, like we talked about, the McCarthyism attitude out of the 50s where somehow this was instilled back in, and maybe for the time it's what was needed. I don't know. I wasn't around in the 50s, but you know, maybe people were looking for some rallying point. I guess I thought World War II was sort of that rallying point. And maybe there was a message of Christianity. You know, I don't know enough about that to know for sure, but I do know that a lot of these things seem rooted in this 50s conservatism that doesn't really jive with some what people think goes back to the 1700s.
293-9000. You can email us anytime at talk@wday.com. Our subject today, are we a Christian nation and should we be? Jim, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Hey, how are you?
Great.
Super duper.
See, I'm not sure if we're going to be a Christian nation, but I mean, I just want to address some of Mike's points. You know, it is kind of a conundrum, isn't it? We, you know, we're told in the society by certain people that, you know, if we don't agree with or if we don't trust people of the Islamic faith, we're Islamophobic. But yet we see the values that they hold. I mean, it's misogyny, you know, the complete oppression of women in so many ways.
Yep.
And the intolerance of any other views according to other than what Islam preaches. And, you know, you've seen in so many other countries, and it's very well recorded. You know, when you have a small amount of the Muslims come in, they're just fine. The more that get there, the more radicalized it gets, the worse it gets. And pretty soon you've got a real problem on your hands. Mm-hmm. And you know, listen to some speakers. There's like 350 to 400 million radicalized Muslims in this world. Now, that's really scary when you think about it. Really scary. And you don't hear anything from the Muslim community condemning all the acts of violence that go on.
Yeah, you're right,
Jim. Among their own communities.
If there's one thing I'm sick of, it's Islamic outrage about everything against Islam. It's just these people need to settle down, you know, and that's part of the problem. That's why Americans have a problem with them
I don't think it's being Islamophobic to question somebody who, you know, I mean, how can you be liberal and say it's okay or tolerate people who beat women, kill women, suppress women, won't even let them drive a car, won't have them have any voice, force them to wear things, clothing that, you know, they could say that's part of their religion or want. I guarantee you, many of those women in those religions, if they took off their hijabs, their husbands would beat them to death. You know, now is that the kind of things we want to tolerate in our society?
No.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it. We'll continue this conversation right after this farm news update and local news and weather with Eric Johnson. You know, I'm thinking that if we were truly a Christian nation, we wouldn't have kids who have to go to school without on an empty stomach, right? I mean, if we were truly a Christian nation, we would believe that healthcare is a right, not a privilege, right? If we were a Christian nation and if we were led by Christian men and women, I would think that they would develop some kind of a healthcare plan that wouldn't disregard the sick and the poor and the disabled, right?
Well, and I have a question too about, you know, this is something that I questioned for a long time, I don't know what the answer is, but we have these beautiful churches all throughout this city and every city in America. Giant buildings, very architecturally pleasing, some of them quite large, that sit empty many nights while there are people that have no place to sleep, yet they get tax exemptions. I know there are soup kitchens, and look, I'm not saying that churches don't do great things, and I'm not saying that those of you that volunteer and help your church do great things, but you know, something I question with churches is I know there's a lot of overseas ministries that happen with churches. Well, why aren't we going into our own neighborhoods in this country? You're given a tax exemption by the United States government. Let's go into our own neighborhoods and do things. Let's open these churches up at night, overnight, when it's 20 below, so people have a place to sleep. I know some of them do these things, but a lot of them sit empty. I don't understand that.
Hey, John, go ahead. You're on Midday Live.
How's your blood pressure today, Sandy?
Excellent, my friend. Excellent. How's yours?
going up by the hour.
Excellent.
That's good.
Good. Then
we're doing our job.
Then, yes, exactly. That means we're doing our job.
What's up, John?
Exactly. So I'm going to spell something for you I saw on a license plate, and I want one of you to see if you can pronounce it.
Oh, no.
Oh, good.
Have your finger on the delay, Nateel.
No, it's not. Jeez. Come on, give me a little slack here today. All right, spell it out. S-H-R-E-Y-A.
Hold on. Let me write this down for a second. Say it again.
S-H-R-E-Y-A.
Oh, Sharia. Well, yeah. Sharia. There you go.
So, why should I have to look at that on a license plate? To me, that's offensive. Now, you talk about, you know, tolerance. And Jim brought this point up, you know, when you focus it on the religion of Islam. It's a religion that supposedly practices tolerance, okay, and getting along. yet they choose not to get along with us. They choose not to denounce the terrorist acts on a regular basis. I mean, I'm not saying that some of them don't. Don't get me wrong here. But to me, if your fundamental principle is we all need to get along, you know, we need to be more loving of each other, why would you not condemn ISIS on a daily basis and make sure you get to the top of the line, just like I do when I call it?
Yeah, I agree, John, in that you're right. I mean, there's a problem that ISIS, you know, and people want to blame the United States and the West for a lot of the ills of the Middle East. But the reality is that it's other Muslims that have done the most damage to Muslims in the Middle East. And again, my question just simply is, when we talk about, you know, what are we as a nation? I in the end, for me, I would rather be in a nation based on Christian Judeo values. And again, I know there's questionable things there too, than a nation of Islamic values, for no other reason, if nothing else, John, that I wouldn't be welcome in one of those countries anyway.
Exactly. And you know, Mike, Christianity had its dark days. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no disputing that. But when you drive around with a license plate like that and you live in the United States, where our laws are fundamentally based around Christian philosophy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
freedom.
Exactly. You know, so it's like you want me to be tolerant of you, but yet you want to be intolerant of me. I mean, it comes back to the school issue, you know, at prayer in school. Okay, we've locked out the Christian fundamentals in the schools, you know, to the umpteenth degree, yet you want to have special rooms set aside for the Muslims to pray.
Well, I think anybody technically can use those rooms,
John. And I don't disagree with that. And I don't disagree with that, except for when you take away my fundamental values and yet want to put another religion ahead.
Mm-hmm. Where did you see this license plate, John?
Driving around Fargo. It's a North Dakota plate, believe it or not.
Really? Huh.
Yeah, and
cool. Okay.
And I have to ask myself how that one got through DMV.
Yeah, how did it get through the check, right?
Well, that, you know, I'm going to look that up when I have a moment here. But, you know, it really does need to be said that there are Islamic groups, including the Islamic Society of North America, who denounced the violence. They have spoken out. There's the Muslim Council in Great Britain. There's
Sandy, but, you know, with the caveat that, yes, okay, there are groups who speak out. But again, these events have been occurring more and more frequently. And for some reason, if they're so steadfastly against ISIS and so steadfastly against this violence, they should move themselves to the top of the line just like any of us do.
Thanks for your call, John. 970 WDAY time, 11:45. I know Nateel is chomping at the bit on this one today.
I guess I my initial thoughts went back to the sort of foundation of the nation and what was originally bringing people over here. And for most people, it was secular. It was an opportunity at increasing their financial station in life. It wasn't about religion. And for those whom it was about religion, most of them were Christian in some form. It wasn't like people were trying to escape Christian prosecution from Islams or something like that. It was Christians escaping prosecution from other Christians. And even when they got over here, the Christian factions didn't get along. There were the Quaker settlements who didn't get along with the Protestant settlements, who didn't get along with the Catholic settlements. So when this particular letter to the editor talks about, you know, not being a Christian nation, I completely agree with him, because there are so many different factions of Christianity that you can't just put that particular label over an entire nation. It's too big.
Mm-hmm.
You can email us anytime as well at talk@wday.com. We're referring to a letter in the paper this morning about being a Christian nation. And we will take your calls at 293-9000, 888-970-9329. Are we a Christian nation? And should we be a Christian nation? This is Marnie. Hello, Marnie. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Sandy. Thank you so much for taking my call. I just had a couple of quick points I wanted to make. First is that the Supreme Court did rule in the Church of the Holy Trinity case that we are a Christian nation. That being said, the First Amendment obviously allows for the free exercise of religion. As to whether or not we're a Christian nation, I think the intent was originally that we would be. George Washington's first speech to the nation included these words. He said, "No people can be found to acknowledge and adore the invisible hand which conducts the affairs of men more than those of the United States. Every step by which they have advanced to the character of an independent nation seems to have been distinguished by some token of providential agency." And then he goes on to talk about the almighty being who rules over the universe and who presides in the councils of nations. That being said, to your earlier point, I don't think we have a whole lot of Christian leaders in the White House or anywhere else,
right,
unfortunately. And then I just wanted to bring up something on the Muslim point, because I think it's important for us to find commonality in this nation where we do allow free exercise. You know, Muslims, at least the ones who are genetically Muslim, are descendants of Abraham and referenced in the scripture. And they worship the one true God, but they do so without the benefit of Christ or grace or forgiveness. They just live under the law. And, you know, and they split up into more than one sect. There are the Shiites and the Sunnis, and I forget which, but one group takes a much harsher position on the law than the other. But the Quran recognizes Jesus as a prophet who can heal the sick and raise the dead and who's coming back again. So I think we can find some common ground with him, notwithstanding ISIS, which many argue, and there's evidence out there, that our American CIA helped to fund and foster them as part of our interference in the Middle East, which obviously has backfired on us. But I think the intent of our founders, it goes back to the Declaration of Independence, to our first president's inaugural address, his first, you know, speech to the nation, and to the fact that he and the founders went to St. Paul's Chapel, which was located where the Twin Towers once stood. And they went there in 1789, and they dedicated the land to the Lord. I mean, things changed a lot after that, but the original intent was clearly that we would be a Christian nation.
Well, then it's a good thing that our founding fathers wrote the Constitution to not reflect that, actually. Think of the mess we'd be in now.
Yeah, when it comes
to that was the case. Marnie, thank you for that well-thought-out call.
When
this
it comes
morning.
To Islam, I don't think people have a problem if you want to come here and practice Islam, that's fine. But you know what? You're also going to have to get on board a little bit with how America operates. And that means you keep your religion in your house of religion or your own home, but in public spaces, wherever they may be, private businesses, keep it out. And that's the disconnect, okay? You know, and Muslim Islamic outrage is something that I think we're all tired of. You know, anytime, somebody said something about the Prophet Muhammad. Well, people say things about Jesus all the time. You know, just these people got to lighten up a little bit. That's the problem. That's the issue I think people have with them. It isn't with their religion. It's with the fact that, you know, you're operating in such a harsh set of rules in America and taking such great offense is just not something that's going to fly here. And that's what people have an issue with, and they don't like it. So fortunately, I think that voice in the Muslim community is getting louder, and I think you're hearing more of that. So that's a good thing, but I don't think we're there yet. And that's, I think, where a lot of people have these issues.
And just to the George Washington comment for just a moment, he really saw religion as necessary for good and moral behavior, but he didn't necessarily accept all Christian dogma. That's important to make note about the first president of these United States. He seemed to have a special gripe against communion and would usually leave service before it was authored. Interesting. In fact, George Washington is the author of one of the great classics of religious liberty, the letter to the Touro Synagogue in 1790. He assures America's Jews that they would enjoy complete religious liberty, not mere toleration, in the new nation. He also outlined a vision, not of a Christian nation, but of a multi-faith society where all are free to practice as they will. So that is also the other side of our first president, George Washington. Chris, you're up next when we return on Midday Live. We're going to lighten things up in the noon hour. What is your potato salad secret? on Midday Live. Chris, stand by. You're next. Hey! 970 WDAY. Good conversation this hour on Midday Live, referring to a letter to the editor from Isaac Weintraub. We are not a Christian nation, nor should be, nor should we be, excuse me. 2939000, talk at WDAY.com. And Chris has a comment as we round out the hour. Good morning, Chris. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I just wanted to comment briefly. I personally, myself, I identify as an atheist.
Mm-hmm.
I was raised in a Lutheran family. But one thing I think that, I consider myself to be culturally Christian, if that makes any sense.
What does that mean?
Well, what I mean by that is, and I think you're starting to see this with a lot more atheists and in non-believers, that sort of thing, is that, I identify with the traditions of the Christian church. I celebrate Christmas, I Easter, all that stuff. I love the stories of the Bible. I think they're great stories. I just don't necessarily believe that it's all true.
We were just talking about this off the air. It's so funny you bring that up, Chris. Yeah.
Because if we did, we would have to believe that purchasing slaves according to the guidelines of Leviticus, keeping a sex slave according to the guidelines of Exodus, forcing a woman to marry her rapist from Deuteronomy, killing children who made fun of a bald man in 2 Kings, killing followers of other religions and non-believers. And
yeah, I think it's important for people to realize that, too, because they think when, you think about atheists, people think of these angry, horrible people that don't want anyone to celebrate Christmas and that sort of thing. When really, I mean, it's okay to celebrate your traditions. It doesn't mean you have to believe in all the magic.
Well, and do you think maybe, okay, and I don't mean to slight anybody's beliefs here, but do you think maybe several thousand years ago, that people that ruled lands or areas or villages had to have some kind of cover to help them keep control as civilization was becoming a thing? I mean, you wouldn't have been able to get where we are today without something like religion. So I'm not saying it didn't have a purpose, and I'm not saying there's not a lot of positive stuff in there, but don't you think that was part of the genesis of the whole thing, is that dawn of civilization, there had to be something like that at that time when so many things were not able to be explained like they are today with science?
Mm-hmm. Well, look at North Korea right now. I mean, when you get married, you go and you make a visit to the statue of the leader. I mean, it's essentially a religion there, too. So
when you call yourself an atheist, what does that mean exactly? Do you believe in God or...
No, it means I don't believe in God. I don't believe in anything supernatural. I don't believe in magic. I don't believe in spirituality. I don't believe in anything. I look for answers and I look for evidence. And, I'm always willing to, if something I think is true now, and I'm willing to change my mind if there's new evidence to lead me in another direction.
Mm-hmm. So do you mind if I ask you how you were raised? Were you raised in a Christian family?
Oh, yes. Yeah, mm-hmm. I was raised Lutheran, just a good Minnesota Lutheran, hot dishes and all that.
Yeah, and, super.
And, it was a great way to grow up. It's just I when I got older, I just decided I don't really, believe in any of this.
Not buying it.
So does your family know? Because they might know now. No.
Oh, yeah. No, they know. And there was some trouble at first, especially with some of the older members of my family.
Sure.
But, it's one of the fastest growing segments of people in my age group. I just turned 30.
Mm-hmm.
Are non-believers. There's more and more and more of them. So I think you're going to start to see a movement of cultural Christian atheists who they love their culture, their background, Christmas, Easter, all that's great. You just don't believe in all the magic.
Chris, thank you for your call here on Midday Live. ABC News is next. We talk potato salad next hour. Stick around for that. I'm going to blow the lid off a potato salad today. Yeah, 970 WDAY time is at 12:12. Tony Bender Day here on 970. We call it 20 minutes with Tony Bender. So we're looking forward to our conversation with him. We do have a couple of emails from our conversation the last hour about being a Christian, being a Christian nation. And Jason writes in, being a Christian does not mean you... I know this. I know that. I was just using those examples from the Bible as... So anyway, I do get that. Being a Christian does not mean you believe in slaves and the stuff you read in the Old Testament. Jesus instituted a new covenant with us. He said, I have fulfilled the old law. We are no longer held to those old set of rules. When did he say that? Do you remember when? I don't remember when he said that. But anyway, we as Christians are brought to what Jesus and the apostles taught. It is painful to hear people say Christians think slavery is okay because that is so far from the truth. And I agree. It is a lack of understanding of what the Bible says as a whole. Thank you for that email into the studio, Jason. I appreciate it. And let's see, Ron writes in, there is this perception that terrorism in the U.S. is imported from a small number of Middle Eastern states, when in fact there are an equivalent number of threats emerging from non-Islamic extremists, such as right-wing groups and eco-warriors. And he's not wrong on that. 293-9000-888-970-9329. Looks like I might be on my own for the rest of the hour.
You might be.
Yes, indeed. So you guys enjoy your lunches, and I'll just continue here with the work.
I'm here for you.
Well.
Because we're going to talk food.
Well, we are. In fact, Julia Child reveals her secret to making the best potato salad.
Do you make potato salad?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes. My mother always made potato salad when we had... you know, events or we had to, you know, potlucks or whenever we were with, you know, family gatherings, my mom always made potato salad.
So you have a long-standing recipe.
Yes. And so, yes, it's hers. It's just sort of her technique, which is a good technique, and it always works great and everyone loves it. And so that's good. But Julia Child really knows the ticket.
You know,
now, I've kind of done things differently over the years because my little sister, who makes potato salad as well, usually the way our mother taught us was we'd make the potatoes,
okay. Boil
the potatoes, and then put them in the fridge and then make the potato salad the next day because then the potatoes are a little more firm. Well, little, you know, Mother Teresa, mother of Mary, Sissy, Susie, she boils the potatoes and then she mixes the potato salad right away.
When they're hot.
Yes, so that those potatoes can sort of soak up all everything that's going into the,
sure,
to the salad.
More porous.
Right. But what does she know? I mean, really.
So you have different techniques off of your mothers,
yeah,
the two of you.
Different techniques. Yes, exactly. But Julia Child, now, she, one of her secrets to making a great potato salad is one that I've never, ever thought of doing.
Okay.
But what she does is she sliced the potatoes first, then she cooked them in lightly salted boiling water.
Oh, so they were cut previous
to
boiling.
So they were cut previous to boiling, which is
interesting. That's,
yes,
an interesting
take. I thought so too.
Mashed potato style, right?
Julia Childs also said, don't walk away from boiling potatoes. Of course, I break that rule too. I've actually forgotten about them and then they've boiled. Have you ever forgotten about boiled potatoes and then you come back and they're like no potatoes left?
I've
just
learned
disappear.
The hard way
it's
over
crazy.
The years how to set it where, and every oven and every place you live is different. And so, yeah, I've got it figured out now at home where I can avoid boil over, but right, it's an ongoing battle.
So Julia says, just because they're in the water doesn't mean they don't need supervision. And this is from Julia Childs. I keep tasting them just to make sure they're just done because crunchily undercooked potatoes are horrifying.
And that's what's
and
tough.
She's right.
Yeah, when you cube them up like she does, oh, that's tough. I mean, if you just boil the whole potato,
right,
it's a little easier to kind of gauge it. Now, I wonder if you could bake the potatoes and then they'd get a little mushy.
Yeah, but what about the other trick, and we follow this one too, is not using too much mayo. Actually, we use Miracle Whip in our salad dressing.
Really?
Yeah, a little bit of Miracle Whip.
The Butweiler clan is totally insane.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, we use Miracle Whip. We don't use a lot of onion because not a lot of people like onion.
Is it hot or cold, though? is the big question. Yeah. Oh, did you know there's hot potato salad?
Oh, gosh, yeah. It's called German potato salad.
It's so weird.
Oh, no. It's the best.
It's German. So weird.
It's German potato salad.
I have a weird thing, though, with potato salad. I don't like it when it's got to be out on the counter for a little while, which I know is
new,
not good. But if it's too cold, I don't like it. I need it to warm a little bit.
You like it room temperature.
Well, closer to room temperature. Not quite, but very close.
If you have any tricks to your potato salad or any secret to making the best potato salad, we'd love to hear it. Potato salad's one of those things you can do just about anything with if you choose. But you guys have you ever had German potato salad?
I don't know that I have, so it's warm. That's the difference?
Oh, yes, it is.
Same ingredients as a regular potato salad, just warm or what?
There's more bacon in it. You don't really use mayonnaise. I've never made it. So I could look up the recipe. I've never made it,
though. You can make one if you want and bring it in.
Well, sure,
we'll try it.
Yes. Let's see. Julia says, potato salad is, after all, about the potato, so you don't want too much mayo in it. It is not even about the mayonnaise. In fact, sometimes you can make potato salad entirely without mayonnaise. And then what kind of potatoes? New red potatoes. I'll get to that in a moment. But Cleo is going to share her secret to the making the best potato salad. Hello, Cleo.
Hi. I use Miracle Whip.
Good girl.
With mustard.
Yep.
Sometimes I'll put in a spicier mustard. Various.
Ooh, yeah.
But I also use whipping cream, sugar, and a touch of vinegar.
Hold on a minute. Wow. Hold on a minute. Whipping cream?
Mm-hmm.
Really? And what was the other one?
Vinegar and sugar.
Just
a little bit of vinegar and a little bit of sugar.
So what do you do?
It gives it a little bit of sweet tang.
Wow, really? Okay. Wow.
And make it so it's not thick, but it's a creamier, a little bit thinner dressing.
So do you mix the Miracle Whip and the mustard and the whipping cream and the vinegar and the sugar together?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, okay.
And if it's too dry, I add a little bit more cream.
Really? Okay. Well, this is a new one for me, Cleo. Is it a hit? Does everyone love it and want your recipe?
I have been asked for the recipe, yes.
All right, very good. Thanks,
Cleo. Well,
we won't
tell anyone.
No, it'll be just our secret. All right, let's sneak Barb in here. Hi, Barb. What is your secret to making the best potato salad?
Well, mine is all very similar, except, sometimes it gets a little thick. And what I do, the little tip I've learned over the years, is add some dill pickle juice and then stir it up, and that, makes it a little thinner. And so it's a little bit creamier, too, I guess, but without the cream.
All right. Very good. And what kind of potatoes do you use? Are you red or new potatoes? Or?
I like red, but I usually use whatever I have on hand.
Oh, you do? Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, and Julia, she used either the new potatoes or the red potatoes.
Yeah, red is what I prefer.
Yep, that is mine, too. You know what my mother used to do, because she made so much of it, and I've learned to do this, is she would make little mini batches and then put it all together at the end.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah, it
is. They don't get all mushed.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Very good, Barb. Thank you so much.
What do you mean mini batches? How?
Well, you'll have a big bowl ready for the potato salad, and then you'll cut up a few potatoes, cut up a few hard-boiled eggs, put your little mixture in there with your celery and onion, stir that up, and then put that little bitty batch, and then just pile it on.
And new potatoes, you mean like russets, or what? What's a new potato?
Well, a new potato, isn't it those little ones, I think?
Oh, the little reds, the baby reds?
Yep. But Julia also says that those Yukon Gold are awfully good, too. So you can use those as well. What she, when we come back, I'll share Julia Child's recipe. And your calls are welcome, too. Feel like sharing the secret to making the best potato salad? 293-9000 or talk at WDAY.com. Down. 970 WDAY. Julia Child revealed the secret to making the best potato salad. Interesting. She slices the potatoes first before boiling them. She says be light with the mayo. And basically, you can use any kind. She likes new potato or red potatoes, but the Yukon Gold are awfully good, too. And when they're boiled just right, then they're just right. She says that then you drain them out. While they're still warm, you toss them with some finely minced shallots, mm-hmm. scallions, or very, very finely minced sweet onion, and then salt and white pepper. She puts in either a little potato cooking water or a little chicken stock and a little bit of wine vinegar to taste. Then I just very gently toss them around.
Wow.
Then she also adds celery and dill pickle. I like a little crispy cooked crumbled bacon and diced hard-boiled eggs. And Julia Child says she always uses the canned red pimento and some fresh minced parsley. Toss that all around. You don't want too much mayo in it. And then dig in.
Sounds
all right,
good.
Let's go to the phones. Marcella, are you going to share your secret to making the best potato salad?
Well, I don't know if it's the best or not, but it's our family favorite.
Excellent.
Miracle Whip and half cream.
Okay.
And mustard, pickle juice, sugar, and I add pimento olives.
It's that pickle juice that I'm hearing now that I'm excited about.
Yep, it adds a little tang to it.
So have you ever put pickles in, like Julia Child? She said
she puts
in dill pickle.
Yes.
I'm going to have to try that.
And I cook the potatoes, red potatoes, with the skin on.
Yep, yeah, so do we.
Yep.
Is that some old-fashioned thing? I mean, that's what we did, too. My mother always did that.
Well,
that's where you learn how to...
Well, I think you save a lot of good vitamins if you could do it that way.
Right, exactly.
Yep.
And then do you slice your potatoes right away when they're warm and mix everything when they're warm?
I cool them.
See, so did Bernie.
What is the ideal time that you found to boil them? How long?
Till when I stick them with a fork, they're done.
Right.
You just know?
Yes, you do.
I just test them.
Yeah, you do kind of know.
So are you looking for it just where they're a bit soft but still firm? Okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Not too soft.
Okay.
You don't want them to fall apart.
No. Uh-uh.
No, and sometimes you can make that mistake and some will fall apart.
I know, we've all done it.
Right, you know you have, exactly. You know, and so give me, Miracle Whip, and then what was the other you used?
Half and half.
Okay, half and half.
Mustard.
Okay.
Pickle juice. Sugar and pimento olives.
Pimento olives. Okay.
Now we've heard half and half and whipped cream. Those are new additions that I've never heard people using before.
So, I always needed to thin out the Miracle Whip because it's too tangy. I didn't like the taste of just Miracle Whip.
Oh, really? Okay.
No. Uh-uh.
My mother just used Miracle Whip with a little bit of mustard.
Oh.
And then a lot of salt and pepper.
Oh, yeah.
No thinning agent in that?
Nope. We're pretty cut and dry.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty cut and dry, yes.
Bare bones.
Especially when you make it, 10 pounds of it, on the weekends.
Right.
After you worked until 11 o'clock. So, well, Marcella, thank you. These are some great ideas and suggestions. I think I might have to try this half and half and the pickle juice and a little bit of sugar. Oh, and then you just make that. Okay, she does. Email into the studio. Let's see. This is from Mark. Sandy, I actually prefer the hot German potato salad versus the mayo Miracle Whip ones. They're really good. If you've never had German potato salad,
I don't think I ever have.
Oh, man, it's good. It has bacon, onions, vinegar is pretty standard items. And Mark says, I use red potatoes because the russets are too meaty for this application. Red potatoes stand up better. This is a much better recipe I use. And so I'll see if I can share that on my page, on my Facebook page here before long. And Darren says, I buy a bucket of frying pans potato salad because it's made fresh every day and it tastes perfect. Excellent. And let's see. That's about it.
I'm looking up some German potato salad. Well, boy, I don't know why I've never had this. It looks really good.
Once you have it, it's usually
more vinegary too, right? It's not as creamy.
It can be.
I'm not seeing any vinegar on the ingredient list. Oh, what? Take that back. There is, yeah.
Okay.
Are we interrupting?
Here.
Yeah, you're interrupting my lunch here, Sandy. Okay. I don't know if you know that or not.
Do you guys want to give your, since we have about a minute, do you want to, since we're talking about food.
Well, I don't know about Mike, but my brat was absolutely fabulous. Mm-hmm. And I had a brat with a pickle on it for the first time today. I've never had a pickle on a brat before.
Oh, that sounds
and it was
good.
Perfect. Because I had my sauerkraut, which was absolutely fabulous. But I hear they stuffed your donut bag pretty full. If you've got too many little donuts in there, I can help with that.
Yeah,
Jay threw
out
half of his cheese curds out. What the heck's up with that?
Why didn't you order anything?
Because I had a job to do.
Oh, okay.
I'm kidding.
Somebody had to maintain some order around
somebody
here.
Had to maintain some, you know, adulthood around here.
Well, but the thing is we have Tony Bender coming up. We could have just let him take the reins. We could be eating.
It's not 20 minutes with Tony Bender today. It's just
20
Tony
minutes
Bender.
Of Tony Bender.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, thank you to everybody who called in revealing their secret to making the best potato salad. But isn't it interesting? You know, my mother always used Miracle Whip, and the three ladies that called in used Miracle Whip.
Yeah. Well, mayo's great, but you get no flavor. I mean,
no.
The Miracle Whip kind of adds a lot of extra ingredients probably that you would need to get some flavor without having to do that.
Next time I think I make it, I'm going to put this pickle juice in it.
Well, I wonder
and
now.
And the bacon.
But see, I wonder with the pickle juice and the Miracle Whip, I could see with the mayo version, the pickle juice, but I wonder if the Miracle Whip, that might be a lot.
Well,
you gotta be careful.
That's what Marcella said.
Okay. She said, she sounds trustworthy.
Miracle Whip, half and half, mustard, pickle juice, sugar, and pimento olives.
Well, if she sounded like she knew what she was doing. So
there you go.
Just be careful with the pickle juice.
Yeah. And, you know, if you have any more ideas for your potato salad that you'd like to share with us, we'll take them. We'll take those calls, too. And it's 20 Minutes with Tony Bender Day. Lots to talk about, including the connection between Donald Trump Jr. wanting dirt on Hillary Clinton so badly, according to a Russian lawyer. We talk about that, too, coming up. Sandy, I've got one for you. My wife makes cake with mayonnaise for the moistest cake ever.
Cake with mayonnaise?
Yes. Oh, man.
You put it in fried chicken, too. Oh.
You put what?
You put, if you're making homemade like chicken strips or something like that, you coat the chicken in a little bit of mayo before you bread it, because that traps the moisture inside the chicken.
Wow.
I got violently sick on mayonnaise once.
Miracle Whip does the same thing. Just use Miracle Whip instead then, Ms.
Well, then no. I got Miracle Whip too. Oh, I see what you're saying.
What happened? I want to hear what happened.
Oh, it was awful. Well, let's bring Tony Bender in first. A writer.
I don't
novelist,
think he wants to hear it.
Columnist, humorist, satirist, journalist, and frequently a radio commentator right here on Midday Live. Good afternoon to you, my friend.
Hey, while you guys were pontificating on the varieties of potato salad, I was eating potato salad.
No way. Your own homemade potato salad?
Well hardly.
Oh, look, of course. Duh.
The Lutheran Church, so this legitimately came from the Lutheran Church basement. Had some kind of potluck the other day, and they had so much left over that they took it to the Senior Citizen Center, which is about half a block away. And so for like a free will donation, you could just load up on all the goodies. So, I wasn't really cheap, but I think I paid about $1 a pound, by the way, it worked out.
Well, good. You guys don't want to know how I got sick. No, you don't want to know how I got violently sick, because it's so dumb.
Well, I don't want to hear about the sick part. I want to hear what led up to it.
Well, all right. This was a long time ago, and I was on location doing a broadcast, and I thought I'm going to really try and make my own lunches and bring them to work.
Oh, you're being healthy.
Right. Well.
Well, right. I mean, compared to eating fast food.
So I took a jar of the Miracle Whip out of the cabinet and opened it, made a little turkey sandwich, just put a little bit on the bread, and it was a 95 degree day. And what I did is I took the sandwich and I threw the sandwich in my pack without any kind of, cooling instrument in it. And so then at around noon, 1 o'clock, I ate the sandwich. And literally, you guys, in 1 hour, I thought I was dying.
Oh, I can't even. Oh.
I was so sick. In fact, when we were on our way home, I had to lay in the back seat. In fact, they had to pull over so I could throw up outside the car. And then we went on a sales call in Wahpeton. And as I walked in, I was like, where's the bathroom? And you could hear me in the bathroom violently, violently sick from eating that sandwich.
That's good
stuff.
Can you
believe it? Oh, my God. All right, let's get into this.
Really, if you just let it sit for a little bit longer and with a meat thermometer, you might have come out of that okay.
Yeah. Good point, Tony.
Yeah, good point. All right, let's dive into the news of the day, shall we? We've now seen the emails that Donald Trump Jr. Exchanged with a Russian lawyer that cites Russian support for his father's presidential bid. He was looking for, and according to this woman, looking quite badly and hoping for some dirt on Secretary Clinton. And we've seen the email chain now. Donald Trump Jr. posted it on Twitter. And so we think those are the right emails. And so now I guess we know that there was some attempt at Russian collusion in our presidential election. Tony, let's start with you and your thoughts and observations.
Oh, you know, and this seems to me like death by a thousand cuts. I wonder if, everybody had come clean in the beginning and said, okay, this is what we did. We were naive. We were dumb. You know, this is everything. There's a chance. I mean, it would have been a bombshell, but there's a chance it would be over. And now, you've got this most damning piece of evidence here. You know, the president's son, looking, to get information from Russia. I mean, and you have to think about this. You know, what if Obama had won an election colluding with Cuba? I mean, we'd still be talking about that. And yet, there's all these people with blinders on that just absolutely don't want to admit that there was some scurrilous activity going on here.
Yeah, and when you read the wording in this fourth page in particular, if you go to Don Jr.'s Twitter account, so it's not fake news, it's not something the media has filtered or anything else. This Goldstein said, I think it's his lawyer, right? Or one of the family lawyers or business partners
the intermediary.
Yeah, right? the intermediary in all of this. But he says, this is him to Don, very high level and sensitive information, but as part of Russia and its government support for Mr. Trump, helped along by, and then he named some of the parties. And what do you think is the best way to handle the information? Would you be able to speak to Amin about it directly? And then they go back and forth about setting it up. But Don Jr. says, he goes, if it's what you say it is, I love it, especially later this summer. And so, obviously they are using a connection with Russia, which here's what I find interesting about it, Tony. At this time in the campaign, right, this was the summer of 2016, what was one of Trump's, and he had a few talking points that were a theme throughout the campaign. One of them was drain the swamp, right? One of them was it's time to change things in Washington. It's time to do things differently. Yet here he is involved in typical Washington underhanded stuff before he's elected.
But what we don't know what the president knew. I mean, is this something that he really had a hand in, or is he just in a position now? Because it's in the family, he certainly is not above throwing people under the bus, but I don't know that he's going to throw his family under the bus.
Well,
so,
he's very quiet on this, though, Tony. And
he'll play dumb.
Right. He's been very quiet on it, and I think that kind of appears like maybe he's letting his son fight his own battle on this one.
Well, yeah, his son is not part of the administration. But whether or not he had anything to do with it, it's a tough position to be in, because when you're talking about family, that's just that trumps everything. Well, but, no pun intended.
Right, but let's not forget that Paul Manafort, who was running the campaign, was in that meeting as well, and so was Jared Kushner, who is now one of the president's senior advisors. And the list of meetings and the list of connections between Jared Kushner and the Russians keeps getting longer and longer. I mean, he is under investigation now as well. It seems like the question has been answered, is that the Trump administration sought information from the Russians to give them an advantage in the election.
You know, and as long as this information keeps coming out, filtering out, it remains a story, and it remains something that's dominating the agenda. I'm trying to figure out what's the end game. You know, when all this information is out, where is it going to go? I mean, I certainly don't see a Republican Congress bringing any articles of impeachment.
No. Yeah, I agree with you, Tony. I mean, I think, and again, that's going to be the question. And there's a lot of people debating it now. Is this treasonous? Is it not? And I don't know enough legally about it. But whether it's treasonous or not, this is clear in print stuff that there was some definite underhanded dealings going on. And I just can't help but think that you have folks that are connected to the party of, you know, McCarthyism, and you've got Ronald Reagan, who based his entire presidency on the collapse of communism and the Eastern Bloc and the Soviet Union. And look, you fast forward 30 years, and now we're talking about colluding with the Russians to have a Republican be elected. It blows my mind.
You know, one thing to think about here is, what if the president knows exactly what Putin knows, that it's pretty much understood that Putin has the goods on the president and his administration and everything that they've done? Think about the immense leverage that gives Putin when it comes to sanctions and any number of things. I mean, he effectively, if that is the case, he has the president of the United States essentially
exactly.
neutered, leashed,
exactly.
reined in.
Mm-hmm. And what we do know is that Donald Trump Jr. was very eager to collude with Russia.
He was excited yeah. about it in the emails.
All right. Let's move on to healthcare, if you guys don't mind, for just a moment. Senate Republican leaders are hoping to finally hold a vote next week on their healthcare legislation to repeal large parts of the Affordable Care Act. There is plenty of division between conservatives and more moderate Republican senators, and it is in question whether or not they will be able to pass this legislation. Guys, Tony, you want to share your observations on this one?
You know, I was surprised that Senator Holman actually took a stand on it, because he's largely been curled up in a fetal position under the desk for much of this administration. Mm-hmm. But we haven't heard boo from him, you know, because, I mean, what's to be gained to be standing up and saying, yeah, I'm all on board with this, especially with something that stands to really hurt a lot of North Dakotans. Mm-hmm. Well, and rural hospitals, if this plays out, the reimbursements for rural hospitals are going to be really, really seriously affected. And I believe the rural hospitals I'd be surprised if there's anybody on board with this.
Well, it's difficult to see how they'll get the votes they need to pass it. So if they don't, Mike, do they scrap it? Do they alter it? Do they change it? Because, you know, I think, as is the case with our Senator John Hoeven, as a Republican, I think he sees now very clearly that he's going to have to come back here and explain it to us. And so will others. And, you know, some of them have an election next year.
Well, and I think the problem they're going to have now is that the big problem is that they have to get some of these more moderate Republicans and even try to maybe grab a few Democrats along the way to get on board with this. The Democrats, we know, are going to be a hard sell pretty much no matter what they do. But the issue that brings us to today is that they couldn't even get a lot of folks like Senator Hoeven, which honestly, to see him go off script is a shocker in and of itself, right? And when has that ever happened? And so you see that. So the latest thing they're going to try, and I'm sorry I'm laughing, but I can't help it almost, is that it looks like, at least now, and we don't know for sure, but one of the key proposals that they're going to float is from Ted Cruz. So when you need to get moderates on board, you're going to use a proposal from Ted Cruz. And the other thing that seems to be convenient, and we'll see how it goes, because my guess is this, that nothing is going to get passed here. And, you know, we'll see if it even gets to that vote or not. But conveniently so far, twice, they keep bringing this up right before breaks, if you haven't noticed.
Right, but the Senate now is going to delay their recess.
They are going to delay
They're going to delay the recess to work on the GOP health care bill.
Well, we'll see if they get something done. But
that
so if they,
is breaking.
Okay, that's just coming out then. But if they want to go with a Ted Cruz proposal, Tony, I don't see that being any more palatable to those that on the Republican side that have a problem with this current proposal. I don't see how anything from Ted Cruz is going to help them get these moderates, whatever it is.
Well, yeah, it's hard to imagine Ted Cruz, moving it to the center at all.
Right.
That is really hard to imagine. You know, the way this thing is structured and timed is to for the other shoe to drop on policyholders after the presidential election. So they're really throwing a lot of Republicans under the bus. So I think they're looking to the next election, you know, the midterms and then the next presidential election. And that's when the hurts are really going to start to be felt. And, boy, I don't know.
I mean, what do you think they'll change? What do they have to tweak to get at least 10 Republicans now who have said that they will not vote for this bill?
Well, you know, first of all, the pre-existing condition can't go away. I don't see that happening. But, you know, there's got to be some substantive way of saying your prices are going to go down and you won't, you know, lose any more coverage than you've got. You know, we spend 17% of GDP on health care. You know, Germany, Canada, they're at about 11%. And if you look at it, if you looked at sliding in to Medicare for all, there are ways to pay for it. But the thing is, the people who would have to pay more for it are the ones who have bought and sold our senators and our representatives.
Mm-hmm.
So that's but look, the power really comes down to the voters, and they will turn once it gets tough enough for them.
Mm-hmm.
If we still have a media left to actually report accurately on it.
Last night was the home run derby. Tonight is the All-Star game. Are either one of you interested in this game tonight?
It's my favorite All-Star game of all the major sports. It's the only one that's any good.
Really?
Well, it's the only one that's really more true to the game, right? The football one, the basketball one, the hockey All-Star games are all kind of defenseless, and guys might not push it quite as hard, where in baseball, it's still the same game.
Exactly. And I have, you know, I haven't watched a lot of baseball in recent years, but I do have a little more fever going. You know, it's kind of fun to see the Twins in the hunt, and you know, I'm an Orioles fan, so they're still kind of in the hunt. It's always anguish for me when they play each other because I really don't know who to cheer for. But in light of what we know about head injuries and things like that. I almost wonder if baseball won't see a resurgence and if we won't see the NFL wane somewhat in coming years.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, it's the one sport. I mean, all sports have their issues, but other than the hitting the outfield wall or getting beaned by a baseball or maybe a catcher collision, you don't certainly have the constant danger play to play like you might have in some of the other sports that some parents are concerned, too, about football. I mean, I have young kids in my house, and it's the kids themselves discuss it. You know, the kids are aware of it now, which is something totally new. They know about these brain injuries and things. So, yeah, it's interesting to have those conversations with these guys and what they think about football, and that's going to be more and more the case as we go forward. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it would be nice to see people maybe turn back to a sport like baseball. I keep encouraging the boys to play baseball because I'm telling them, I go, right now, of all the sports, if you really want to play and compete at a high level, not a lot of kids go out for baseball. It's not the cool thing to do right now. So
it's
there's a lot of opportunity.
Hmm. All right.
It's a great, you know, it's a great game because it's a thinking game. Mm-hmm.
It is,
and,
isn't
and,
it?
You know, my daughter has been dragged kicking and screaming to a few major league ball games, and she's just bored to tears. Mm-hmm. But you're not bored to tears when you've played the game and you understand
exactly.
it and you understand the strategy.
Exactly.
And so there's a sense of anticipation when you understand the game. That lends itself to an obvious lack
right.
of action sometimes.
Right, exactly. But
it's just such a great American game. Oh. It's still my favorite.
I couldn't agree more, Tony Bender. Learn the game, and it will become more interesting to you. Certainly. All right, Tony Bender. Thank you very much, Mikey. We're done.
It's Neil
Falk. We're out of here. This is Midday Live. We're going to dig in the garden tomorrow morning at 11 with Don Kinsler. Join us. For Lawn and Garden Radio.